You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
And I was like, I just don't think that's a thing lesbians do. I don't think that's a mistake we make. We know what both things
You don't know what you
like.
Just stepped into, Christina.
You don't know what you just did.
Why has this happened to one of you?
Fuck.
I'm dyking out, you're dyking out. Let's dyke out together. See what it's all about.
Dyking out, dyking out, dyking out.
Hi, and welcome to Dyking Out, a podcast that all of your exes listen to. I'm Carolyn Bergier.
I'm Melody Kamali, and today we're dyking out with writer and podcaster Christina Cattarucci about friendships with exes. Don't know much about that.
Can't. Triggering. No, this is a fun one. I can't wait to get into it. But before we do, just a reminder to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. That's something that every podcast asks you to do. There's a reason for it. It helps so much. 5 stars over on Apple Podcasts, please. Also sign up for Patreon for as little as $5 a month at different levels. You can also get ad-free episodes, all sorts of stuff. But for $5 a month, you get an extra episode every week where we go behind the scenes of the pod. We open up about our personal lives. We talk about current events, all that good stuff. So head over to patreon.com/dykingout. Melody, what's the gayest thing you did this week?
We're recording this on a Monday, so apologies if it's not gay enough. I'm just embarking on this week, and I just got to go to this weekend. We had our watch party, the last one. I went out to a brunch with all queer people, all queer POCs.
That's so gay. That's so a really brunch? Gay week already since okay. The last time we recorded. Brunch with all gay, yes.
Okay. Me and my little queer POC group of friends are, for some reason, everything is sort of like popping off for everyone individually. And we're just starting to notice, we're like, wait, we're all doing relatively well. Let's celebrate that. Self-love.
Cheers.
Queer. And specifically, like the big one we went to celebrate is one of our friends, Justin Covington, was recently cast in Billy Eichner's new all LGBTQIA rom-com called Bros. It's going to come out August of 2022. They're just starting to shoot now. I'm just so proud of him. It is
yes.
A huge deal. Everyone cast, all the principal cast of this film will be openly gay, queer. Even the straight roles are going to be played by homosexuals.
Love it.
everyone in it.
Wow.
That's just so historic. I can't wait to watch it. I'm so proud of Justin. And we drank mimosas about it.
That's great.
That's about it. And then, you know, I was just excited to get to watch things that weren't the L word now that we're finally done obsessively watching and creating jokes 24/7 about that goddamn show, which we love.
Right.
But it was good to pivot and watch something else, something like Squid Game, something very different than the L word, okay?
I wouldn't know because I was watching so much of the L word. I have yet to come up for air, but I'm glad you did. And I can't wait to get to it because it's all the internet's talking about.
Yeah. There's one girl in it. I mean, everyone's falling in love with Ho Young Jung.
I've seen that much. Yeah.
So hot. Yeah, definitely one of my newest favorite TV characters.
And not a queer character, but reads kind of queer.
Yeah, queer
coded. Is that my understanding? Okay.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of different little queer coded relationships happening in there between two men. Her and this one other female character, I definitely felt something going on between them, but I didn't know how much of it was me willing it. I mean, it didn't happen, but yeah. Love Squid Game. This is gay of me. Is it? Is stubbornness gay? I don't. Why? With this section, I'm just like, this is just arbitrarily assigning gayness to whatever I do or think.
That's gay culture.
Feel. Yeah.
Arbitrarily assigning.
Yeah,
gay culture.
So maybe it's gay to feel this way. I just, when things have so much hype around them, I get stubborn. I hold out. I don't watch it until the hype has died down, until I watch it on my terms. But like, I just, I don't know. I was very intrigued when I heard the concept of it and I was locked in. I binged all of it over the weekend. You got to watch Squid Game.
Okay, it's good to know that it's a weekend binge. I will do it on my way because we were recording this before I head to Orlando for Girls in Wonderland. So I will see if I can maybe watch it on the plane or something.
As you head down to Girls in Wonderland.
Debauchery.
Yeah, debauchery. I mean, can't wait for that gayest thing report. In the meantime, Carolyn, what's the gayest thing you did this week?
The gayest thing I did this week or weekend, it happened yesterday, and that I went to back-to-back queer birthday hangs, one unexpected. So I was supposed to go to a friend of the pod, Erica Rose, was celebrating her birthday, was having some people meet up at a bar. I was going to go there, but I was hanging out with a friend of mine, past guest of the podcast, comedian Veronica Garza. She told me about this other queer comedian's birthday hang that she was headed to. So I was like, well, let me drop you off and I'll go and hang out there. So at a gay bar that I'd never been to.
Peter's?
In Williamsburg. Yeah, the Exley. I've never been there.
Yeah.
Full of the hottest gay men you've ever seen.
I wanted to go to that. My period cramps were unbearable. I was going to go to that. Damn. I love hot
beautiful
gay
men. The entire bar. It was kind of disorienting. I'd never been like, it was just like a very certain type of gay man, and they were all in this one place, and the music was great. I was sad to leave, but I'm like, oh, I'm running late to this other bar hang, so let me get on my way. So I go to the other bar, and I don't like being late to things. I'd rather be early and leave early because I am an elder millennial lesbian, and I get to the bar. Nobody's there. I've never been there. And the staff is just kind of sitting around. And this one woman who works there is like, oh, are you looking for somebody? Because nobody's here. And I'm like, well, yes, there's supposed to be a birthday meetup, as far as my understanding. But maybe I'm the first one here because the week before, or a couple weeks before, when I was in Albuquerque, there was like a before the wedding hang, you know, when you have an out-of-town wedding, everybody meets at a bar the night before. And Cecilia and I were half an hour late to that. And we were the only ones there for a good 20, 25 minutes. So I'm like, well, this is just happening to me again. So I'll just order a drink and wait for people to come. So I strike up a conversation with this bartender who is queer, and we're talking about queer stuff. And then one thing leads to another, and I end up holding the ashes of their deceased partner. That felt really gay.
Yeah.
You know, the universe just wanted, somebody needed to hold the ashes. The ashes were actually formed into a ring and a necklace, and it was very beautiful.
Oh, like showing, it was made
yeah,
into...
It wasn't like loose ashes.
I thought it was loose ashes.
No. She's not carrying... Like, she's cool, not sprinkling around.
Gayest thing of the week. Oh, yeah, no, I see. No. But still, I feel like that's queer. That's pretty queer.
Right. She was showing me pictures of a recent trip she took to the Pacific Northwest. Queer.
Okay, queer.
Was talking about spreading some of these ashes, that she spreads them a little here, a little there, in nice places. And then also was showing me the jewelry, and then I held it. So that was queer. And then I'm finally like, you know, it's been a while. So where is text? Everybody? Well, first I texted Erica and I wrote, hey, been here for a bit, ... To her, she thought I was just at the bar that everyone was at, which was not the bar I was at, because there was a change in location,
and nobody
and I didn't get
Carolyn.
The memo.
I just assumed
and felt
someone
like a mean prank.
You. Yeah,
no, nobody told me. So you know, I'm glad I met that bartender and held her ashes.
You wouldn't have had a gayest thing.
Yeah. So. So then I eventually, Melody, thank you for letting me know where everybody actually was, and then went out and hung with pretty much all queer people. Was everyone there queer?
No, let me tell you.
Okay.
Okay, so this is actually, why didn't I say this for my gays thing? Damn it, Carolyn. We gathered for Erica Rose's birthday. There were a lot of people from the Lesbian Bar Project there. Everyone was essentially gay, or so I thought. I look towards the end, like the party's starting to wind down, and Erica goes, all right, well, I guess I should go talk to my straight friends. I go, straight friends? And it, all the way in the back of this outdoor area, back patio situation. I mean, there's like, they're literally barricaded. There was like a line, people, we'd shove tables out of the way so we could all stand in this backyard area, but in doing that we had like excommunicated this table of straight people. Not intentionally, but there was just like these barricaded, like stacked chairs and like tables, and then just like a little table of five straight people in the back. And I was like, oh shit, straight people. Like, it was just so funny.
Wow. Just wow, to, they must have been so nervous.
A few. I guess it's, I should talk like to my straight friends.
The queer force field had pushed them to the outskirts of the bar. Well,
yeah.
Yeah.
Jeanette was there. And
Jeanette was there.
Jeanette, if you remember Queen of Fire Island, I talked about what? In,
it was a gayest thing.
It was
maybe
my gayest
10 episodes
thing.
Ago. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
She had reported back that a lot of our listeners are now following her, and she's really just grateful that I mentioned her and her Instagram handle as my gayest
and
thing
her boobs.
She's made
yeah.
in her boobs.
No.
I mean, I
yeah,
wasn't
you didn't mention
go
her
there.
And her Instagram as your gayest thing. You mentioned her boobs. It was very much focused on
her boobs. I saw the most perfect boobs, the most iconic set of breasts on Fire Island. And I mean, I know
worth
that's why a lot of people followed her, but I think she's made a lot of genuine human connections too. And it was really good to see Jeanette. Okay.
Great.
Clothed
connecting people.
This time.
Gay. Well, today we are diking out with Christina Cotterucci about friendships with exes, possibly the gayest thing. Christina is a senior writer at Slate and a co-host of their queer podcast, Outward. This is such a fun conversation, so let's dive right in. Christina, thank you so much for diking out with us today. It's great to meet you.
Yeah, you too. Thanks for having me.
Found you on Twitter, tweeting about Rosie and L-word Gen Q as one does these days, you know?
As Carolyn does these days. Yeah. I'm never on Twitter, so Carolyn was funneling your tweets to me.
Do you have like a notification set up for Rosie O'Donnell or something?
I should. I have one for when Rosie tweets. I don't spend much time on Twitter anymore, but I do have notifications for when Rosie tweets only. And I go on Twitter. I don't catch much anymore, but I will kind of scan what people are saying about the L word, Gen Q. I mean, I know I've come across your content before with like Slate and everything, but that really got me to focus in and be like, we got to dyke out.
Yeah, I've been dyking out about the L word, Gen Q hard. I mean, it's like, I don't know how you guys feel about the whole thing, but for me, it's like a sibling where I love it and I hate it and I hate to love it and I love to hate it and I can't live without it.
Of course.
That's basically right. How I feel about the entire show. And, you know, when the new episode drops, it's like, you know, group text popping off. Yeah. I can't get anyone's opinion soon enough.
Yeah, it is like a sibling in that like we can make fun of it, but other people can't. Like I'm friends with like a lot of gay guys who were like, can you explain the L word to me? And they're like, oh, got it. And they started to join in on making fun of it without even having seen it. And I was like, whoa. That's for me.
that's not
you
okay.
You can't say that. No.
The only acceptable reaction from people who aren't, you know, queer women or in the target audience of the L word, Gen Q, is like pure respect, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's how my mom is. My mom really watches it. Well, one for Shane, but also she just really is into the drama of the L word and she like never says anything negative about it. So
wait, is your mom into Shane?
Shane. Yeah. So,
have
so
I
much.
Missed that? Is that like a recurring theme of this podcast that I missed or something?
It came to a head.
Recently. Yeah. So, Kate and Leisha came to one of our watch parties at Henrietta Hudson, and it was my mom's birthday the following week, and Kate was nice enough to film this birthday video for my mom. And, like, I can never do better than that for my mom her birthday. Like, she emailed back. She's like, this is better than Russell or Liam, like Russell Crowe, Liam Neeson. Like, for some reason, Kate Menig. Yeah. Kate Menig is like her number one. She like loves Ray Donovan just because Kate's in it. Like, it's very weird. But my mom is just like obsessed with her eyes and her voice specifically.
I mean, aren't we all?
Yeah. Understandable. She does seem like a really good bridge between cultures and sexualities.
Right. Definitely. It's a very weird thing because I feel like my mom's never really understood not femme women.
Mm-hmm.
No matter who my friends are, no matter like what she knows about my life and my culture, for some reason, she just can't wrap her head around somebody not being femme. And then, but Shane, she gets. Like,
she's that's like, so helpful.
Yeah.
Like a little beginner's, like, you know, gender non-conforming women for dummies.
Exactly.
I need to ask you a question. Uh-oh. Christina.
What?
What's the gayest thing you did this week?
Oh, I'm so glad that I'm on your show this week because yes. I actually have a really, really good answer. It's layered too. It's like a Russian nesting doll of a gay thing.
Great.
So the first gay part was I had a guest in town over the weekend. My wife and I had a friend come into town from New York. And the way we know this friend, and this relates to the theme of this episode, is she is my wife's ex's high school best friend.
Your wife's ex's. Okay.
Got it.
High school best friend. Now it's just our friend, you know.
Yeah,
but like,
yeah.
This is how we know her. She came into town and brought a game. Are you familiar with Esther Perel, the relationship?
We were just talking about her on a Patreon episode.
Oh, great.
Because my sister loves her and is constantly just giving me her books. And it started with Mating in Captivity. And I was like, what are you trying to say about me and my relationship right now?
Yeah, it's impossible to recommend a couples therapist like podcast or book or anything without making it seem like you're making a commentary on someone else's relationship.
Right.
But so she has this new game, which when I first heard of it, I have very little patience for a lot of like woo, you know, a lot of these stereotypical, like, our culture, like, crystals and Sagittarius this and Enneagram that, like, it's not for me. I respect it, but it's not for me.
That was all just an attack on my wife, who's a Sagittarius, who has just amassed a new collection of crystals. It's her new thing. Anyway, go for it.
I mean, all the best to her. I'm really happy. Hopefully she's feeling centered as fuck. But this game, you know, my friend who is 100% that woo, who, you know, came to our house, brought this game where game is kind of a strong word for it. It's like a set of cards that help you engage in deep conversation with people. So the cards are like, what's a mistake you'll never make again? Or, and some of them are sexy, like, when I have sex, this is what just makes the world melt away. Or, what did you learn about love from your parents?
So, like, job interview questions. Like,
yeah, pretty much. or like the ones that were sexual had a little pink triangle on them, because gay people are the only ones who would feel comfortable answering them. But, you know, some of them were just your general therapy speak.
Yeah.
And so we had some friends over for dinner and played this game, and it was actually really, really fun because it's the kind of stuff I love, probing like questions, and I'm very nosy. And I think I've even been accused of being too much of a journalist in social situations. And in fact, my wife will sometimes stop me and be like, you're interrogating somebody right now. When actually, I just think it's a totally normal question to be like, oh, so like when you're having sex, what makes the world melt away? You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't seem that weird to me to want to know that about all the people in your life. But having an excuse, especially for the couple of friends at the table who aren't normally so forthcoming, to be like, you know, here's a safe space. It's not me asking it. It's the card. You know, I have no say in this. It's Esther Perel coming in and forcing us to answer these only if you want to. I guess force is maybe the wrong word, but that's kind of what I wanted it to be. I don't want it to be optional. And it felt extremely gay and really friggin' fun.
I can't wait. Isn't it not out yet? Is this the...
My friend had a copy of it. I think it's... So then right after this dinner party, our friend like immediately texted and was like, where do I buy that game we just played?
Yeah.
And she looked and she's like, oh, it looks like it's on back order or something because so many people have rushed to purchase this game because she's so popular. Yeah.
Yeah, she really is. I love her voice.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was like, why do you need... It felt to me like, oh, can't we just have a conversation on our own? But as soon as you see the questions, I was like, oh, yeah, like, what is a smell that makes me nostalgic? Never thought that I would want to answer that or need to know someone else's answer to it. But it's actually kind of telling to get someone thinking about stuff like that.
Well, now I want to know, what's a smell that makes you nostalgic?
So this is a story I didn't intend to tell on this podcast, but yeah, now it, like, you got to say the first thing that comes to mind. I actually don't know the name of it, but it's basically the first woman who I ever hooked up with who I was like, oh shit, like this could be a real thing for me. Like I could just not sleep with men ever again and be okay with it. Whatever like the perfume or cologne that she wore, and this was years ago, like more than a decade ago, I can still like immediately when I pass someone on the street wearing that, and it takes me right back to like college. And I just want to follow the person around like a, you know, Pepe Le Pew, like my nose just following a cloud on the air.
Yes.
What about you?
Well, now you have me thinking about the ways that some of my exes from like high school, like the Bath and Body Works scents, you know,
I was going to say that
cucumber melon,
the apple one.
Yeah. Cucumber melon was definitely my shower gel. but I dated somebody who wore warm vanilla sugar.
That was the sexy one.
So, yeah, that one would get me. But I've been wearing the same perfume since high school, and it's one that like I guess not a lot of people wear, and whenever I see people like from my past, they're like immediately oh my god, you smell the same.
Wow, that's really sweet.
And then whoever I'm with who doesn't know that I've been wearing it that long is like, what? Like, I'm really weirded out that people like remember how I smelled. But yeah,
that's what they would call a signature scent.
Yeah, I think it's my
signature
scent.
That's very sophisticated.
Yeah, I've always wanted a signature anything.
Right.
I love that. What's the scent? Are you going to keep it under wraps?
Maybe I should. I don't know. I don't want people walking around smelling like
that. That's actually one of the things about a signature scent. You don't want other people to copy it because then it's not your signature anymore.
Melody, do you have any smells that make you... Juicy Fruit's another one. Juicy Fruit gum reminds me of my grandma's bedroom.
Huh. Did she eat Juicy Fruit?
She had, you know, I can't even remember her... chewing, like the thought of my grandma chewing gum is a little bit weird, but I remember she always had like a drawer in her bedroom full of Juicy Fruit, and then it would always smell a little bit like Juicy Fruit. Yeah.
Fun. Oh, I have another one. Fried dough or funnel cake makes me think of the boardwalk on the Jersey Shore, which was like a big childhood pastime of mine.
Nice.
Yeah. Mine's, it's just Persian food. I don't know. I don't. I'm trying to think of scents. I'm like, I guess I disassociate a lot in my childhood. I'm just trying to think of something.
And I mean, Persian food's a good one.
Yeah, Persian food. Like I walked past a Persian. I didn't know I was walking past a Persian restaurant in Brooklyn recently and got this like whiff of like this exact dish like that triggered flooded memories that I hadn't smelled in a long time. Like not a really common one.
Well, that's what made it weird when I had COVID and I lost my sense of smell. After like a few days of it, it started making me really sad that I couldn't smell my wife. And then I was like really realizing like how much of an emotional connection that we do have to scent. Like I was really getting upset. Like after I'm like, I'm sick of not being able to smell my wife anymore. This is crazy. Yeah. It bums me out.
Yeah. And similarly, every time I use a new skincare product, my wife is like, I wouldn't recognize you in like, you know, in a dark room, whatever. Like, I wouldn't recognize you. You know, please return to whatever cream you usually use.
I get it. I get it. Well, tell our listeners, Christina, a little bit more about yourself and about the podcast that you host for Slate, which I think some people probably already listened to or might be interested in if they haven't heard it yet.
Yeah, that would be great. I would love for us to have a little Venn diagram of listeners.
Yes.
So I'm a writer at Slate, and I also host our podcast Outward, which is all about queer life. We do interviews, we review cultural products, talk about whatever is obsessing us that month. We also do every month a round of prides and provocations. The provocation part was named after, as you can probably guess, Beth Porter's seminal exhibition at the California Arts Center.
Yes.
What was her museum?
Yeah, the CAC.
The CAC, of course.
where, you know, we're either proud or provoked by things that queer people are doing in the world. It's really fun. I like to think it's smart, but, you know, we'll leave that to our listeners to decide. it's funny. We just actually had, this was sad, one of our hosts left to go write a book. So we're currently looking for a third right now. It's just me and my co-host, Brian. And the host that was leaving, we were talking about, you know, let's have a little send-off for him where we all say what we love about him. And our producer was like, you know, I feel like the role he plays in the podcast is like, he's really like the smart one. And we were like... cool. So that makes us like the bimbos or like what exactly? And she's like, oh, no, you're all smart. But he's like the really smart one. So that was fun. That was a fun, you know, keep us grounded. Don't let us get too full of ourselves.
Okay. So it used to be a smart podcast and now it's like a little
now
less
it's gonna
smart.
It's going to be us talking about like glistening deltoids and stuff, which... our listeners hopefully will come with us on that journey. But yeah, at Slate, I also write about queer stuff all the time just because that's who I am and what I love. One of my favorite pieces that I really hope my parents never read was about, remember the movie Booksmart?
Yes.
One of my favorites. Yes.
Of course you do. So, you know, at the end, she finally gets to hook up with this girl and it's really awkward. And she's like, they do that thing where it's like, oh, oops, wrong hole. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I was trying to finger you in the vagina and I stuck my finger in your butt. And I was like, I just don't think that's a thing lesbians do. I don't think that's a mistake we make. We know what both
you don't
things
know what you
like.
Just stepped into, Christina.
You don't know, really?
Know what you just
uh-oh.
Did.
Uh-oh. Why has this happened to one of you?
Fuck.
It happened no. to Melody, and I no. said
I was drunk.
Okay, well, I need to issue a correction on the piece that I wrote, which was basically
arguing
that it couldn't
happen. No, I'm the only person. I guess
happen.
I'm the only person.
My whole thing, my only critique on Booksmart was like, that's a weird thing. You know, I was like, a queer person must not have wrote this because that would
yes,
never happen. And Melody was like, hold my beer.
Oh my God. have you already shared this story? I would love to hear details.
I think it came up once on the pod, right?
Well, not even know, it might have been a Patreon. I
really?
Would hear it
we
again.
We used to share too much, and yeah, we moved a lot of that to the Patreon. and I feel like I thought this was before then, but yeah, we were talking about Booksmart. I'd recently rewatched it. Was it maybe around then? No, you were just ranting about it, and you're like, that's not a thing. That doesn't happen. And I was going to let you keep on and not bring it up because I was getting so embarrassed the more you went on. But I was new to sex with women, and I was drunk because I was new and nervous, and I just shoved a hand down there, and it was just like the movie. I mean,
you're
she
like,
was like,
wow,
I think you have the wrong
this is
hole.
Harder than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it was like very quick. It's not like I was like really working the bunghole. I was just went for it. And I think she knew what was about to happen. And she was like, oh, no, no.
And then
it
you
all
went and
was very
your
quick.
Hands, hopefully, before
yeah.
you. Wow. Oh, my God. I stand corrected. And I, you know, no shame in that game.
So
and
much
in fact,
shame.
Like, you know, I was talking to some people at the time, like, don't you guys all agree that this seems very unrealistic and in fact just like a punchline from a frat boy movie or something? And they were like, Christina, not everyone like explores their own body or other people's bodies before they go into it. When people are nervous, anything can happen. When people are drunk, when everything's really lubed up, like, stuff can happen. Don't be prescriptive about other people's sex lives. And you know what? They were proven right. So thank you. Oh my gosh. I'm so happy
wow,
to know that.
Happy to help.
We'll have to find the original episode we talked about that and then issue a correction and be like, you know, as stated.
We really are a diverse community. Wow.
I know. I mean, I'm constantly making assumptions that I'm like, this would never. Oh, regularly? Other people? Okay. I just thought my experience is universal, but that's fine.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
But one experience that some people think is universal for our community is being friends with exes. And that's what we're going to talk about today. We've talked, you know, we talk about exes, we've talked about queer friendships, but we've never really had a whole episode about this strange world of being friends with exes. Unless you don't think it's strange. You do think it's normal. You want to ask them about their nostalgic sense. And
So this is definitely a situation where I'm extrapolating from my own experience and those of everyone around me. But I do feel like this is one of the few stereotypes about queer women that is both more true than a lot of other ones and also less unflattering than many other ones. Because actually, I think it's a great thing if you can be friends with your ex, although I'm sure we'll get into the ways that it can go horribly wrong. Yeah. But I also think it's a big thing that often sets queer people apart from straight people. Because when I'm speaking to queer people about being friends with exes or being friends with exes, friends, or being friends with friends, exes, you know what I mean? Like any of the ways that this web can constitute itself, I feel like straight people are like, oh my God, that's so big and brave of you, or something like that, you know, where it's like, oh wow, or every mention of an ex in a straight circle, which for me is mostly, you know, I have some straight friends, you know, they're great. But also like with my sister, she's straight and has a lot of straight friends. It's very much like once somebody breaks up, they leave the circle and that's the end of it. And they're like never to be heard from again.
Right.
And it's very painful to talk about or they're only brought up in the context of bad mouthing them. And I feel like this is one of the myriad ways that straight people can learn from us and create better and more lasting relationships in their own lives.
Right.
What do you guys think? Is my experience universal or isn't it?
I mean, I agree with those points that it is more common and that it's not like an unflattering stereotype. But I think part of the difference is, and then maybe this is me just being basic, but I do think a lot of times, you know, like cis men have troubles having non-sexual relationships with women.
Mm-hmm.
That it's just like confusing for them to have that or to have that kind of a friendship where there truly is nothing else at play. That's obviously like a huge generalization and overarching stereotype. But I don't know, because I've like been gay for so long. So like all of my friendships with my guy friends, I have like great close friendships with men, but I would gander that I'm probably like their closest female friend because sex is off the table.
Yeah.
Well, stepping in as a technical bisexual, culturally lesbian. I've been with my girlfriend for 5 years, so I'm just like, yeah, culturally.
The technicality.
Yeah. I don't talk to men that I've been with. Like, it was a hard cutoff. And there's a lot more like fluidity in the relationship post intimacy with women afterwards. I think at least my ex-boyfriends had no emotional intelligence. I was also younger, in my 20s. Like, and it just got so toxic. It would end, like, there was no like processing. And I feel like with women, we're constantly processing, so it's easier to have like a more seamless end to the relationship. it's also like scarcity. I don't know. We're friends because it's all we have. Like, we know we're going to inevitably run into each other. Carolyn's run into her ex-wife twice at our Henrietta Hudson watch parties now.
Yes, I did run into my ex-wife.
I mean, was that the right reaction, or should it have been a gasp?
But it's just like, you know, she's on a lesbian basketball team and they're having their lesbian basketball league, of course, like gathering at the one of two or three lesbian bars in New York, and of course it's going to overlap with our lesbian event there. Yeah, it's like a small community.
There's only so many places she can have a happy hour. Mm-hmm. And then when I'm out and about, I'm always going to suggest a gay bar. So like, yeah, we're going to run into each other, and it's good to be, you know, cordial and not have it be like drama or something when it happens, you know?
That's funny because, I mean, I guess in my head, I was thinking that, I mean, I totally agree with the scarcity point, and in fact would think of, you know, if you live in a small town or something where you really are only like one gay bar, or like your small community, it's absolutely necessary to, at the very least, tie up all the loose ends on the drama so that everyone can move forward without being uncomfortable.
Right.
But I would think in a place like New York that it would be possible to actually not see each other ever again. But I guess not.
One would think.
No. 9 million people, and yet
I've run into my ex-wife so many times, and my wife now has run into my ex-wife like on the subway, just, you know, at marches. That's a good place to run into an ex.
Yeah, marches.
Any type of social justice cause.
Yeah, the Dyke March was just landmines.
Yeah. It's funny because I was talking to my friends about this topic, because we do have some exes, although our friend group is not usually like dating each other. It's more like people who dated a long time ago and now have like, they're sort of the part of the core membership of this, of like our little circle of friends or whatever. But we have one friend who's going through a really terrible breakup, was basically, you know, betrayed and gaslit and in ways that would definitely warrant like not really speaking to that ex ever again.
Right.
And like us probably not speaking to that ex ever again, or at least not wanting to. And, you know, I think that this might also be easier to do, or I see it happen more among people who dated when they were younger, especially when you're like just coming out or just figuring out what you want. A lot of times I've seen people, and I also have dated people that we actually would be better off as friends, but like there's not that many queer people around. So we dated each other, and then it's like, no, like, you know, two friends of mine dated and they are like both tops and it just didn't last. Yeah. Or like, oh, we're too much the same. Or I actually feel like I just admire you, but you were the person there. And so we hooked up, and then we dated for a couple months or whatever.
I feel like that's what happened with my ex-wife.
Really?
Kind of. We were friends and we were hanging out so much, and then it just got confusing. I'm like, I don't know, are we into each other?
And then next thing you know, you are. And I also think on the flip side with the breaking up, it can get, I think there's a limit to how much processing should go on. You know, sometimes I think that we like process to death and draw things out too far, or go, are we, aren't we, whatever. But I think having the kind of closure that sometimes you can only get by being at least friendly, if not friends, is like something to strive for when both people in the relationship ended relationship are mature enough to make that happen and not the kind of people who you actually need to cut out of your life.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I think it definitely depends on a lot of factors. Like I've heard, and like for me personally, like I'll be friends with somebody that maybe I, you know, casually dated or dated for a little bit, or like I came out when I was 17, so like I can hang out with the people I dated back in high school, you know, it's not a big deal. But like anybody who I was with for years, I can't have them as a friend. Though I could see myself being friends with my ex-wife at this point. Definitely, we started out as friends, sometimes it just doesn't feel like healthy. I don't know. And then I also have this issue with then when you start dating someone else, like, are you just bringing unnecessary baggage into the equation? I also had like a very toxic relationship for years with somebody, and it started out that they were not over their ex, and it made me feel awful all the time. And I'm like, I never want to make anybody else feel that way. Like, whether or not it's there's like legit concern, I would still not want that ex around lurking in the background, making someone paranoid, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, I guess I haven't had like a recent ex. Like, I've been with my wife for like, you know, 9 years or something. But I do remember at the beginning, you know, when you're still trying to feel out a relationship, it can feel a little bit threatening to be like, oh, cool. So this person's coming to the party and like you invited them. And like, did you want something dramatic to happen or like what's going on here? Or like, oh, cool. They're like on your Instagram grid before I was. Nice. Like, here we are, but whatever. So I could see this, and I'm curious how you two feel about this. I could see this becoming a thing where it feels like pressure because it's a lesbian thing or a queer thing, where like, oh, if you're not cool with like your partner being friends with their ex, then you're just being like unnecessarily jealous or possessive, or like, are you not, you know, down with our progressive like sense of what relationships should be. Do you feel any kind of pressure? Am I putting that pressure on you by wanting to make this universal
rule? I feel that
rule?
Pressure all that time. I'm a jealous, possessive person. Like, I'm like fully owning up to that. And my girlfriend is, maybe it's because I'm a chaotic bisexual, I don't know, but my girlfriend is a lesbian and is cool with all of her exes. And I was so threatened by that at the beginning of our relationship. Like, it was very hard for me. And I felt like just a bad queer for that reason. A lot of our friends are all friends with their exes. Everybody hangs out, but I felt like alienated in, like, just to tack on to all those other bad feelings, alienated too about having them.
we get emails from listeners who are, especially like they're going into their first queer relationship or they're bisexual and it's like been a while. And then they're like at a party with their new girlfriend, and then there's multiple exes there or something, and then they're freaking out because they're used to like situations where that would cause a problem or cause jealousy, and it can be like a little bit overwhelming, especially with like some people I know, they're just like really close with their exes, and it can be a little bit disorienting if you're not used to it, and if that's not part of the culture that you're used to. I could see finding that to be being like, what's the deal here? Why is your ex helping you move in with your new girlfriend?
I mean,
which happens all the time.
Yeah,
it's part of the culture. It's like, I literally was scrolling today. It's all like dyke meme accounts being like, what's a group of lesbians called? Exes, you know, just like, just saw that not 2 hours ago. So you're supposed to feel like you're supposed to be cool with it.
I think the problem that I'm identifying here is I feel like there's a both and in lesbian culture where it's both common to sometimes like not be over the ex and like maybe be enmeshed with them in an unhealthy way.
Yeah.
And it's common to like have a great relationship with an ex, be moved on, not want to be with them, be friends with them, and like sometimes forget you even dated.
Right.
Because that's just not the kind of relationship you have. And so for someone coming in, you know, I won't say from the outside, but someone who feels like they're on the outside a little, or somebody who's just stepping a toe into the culture. Like, even when I, you know, would tell my sister, for instance, who's straight, not the same as being bi, obviously, but, you know, somebody who's less familiar and comfortable with queer culture, that my partner's ex was coming to our wedding, she was like, oh my God, like, are you okay with that? And like, am I going to have to like cut a bitch, you know? And I was like, no, you know, again, this is one of the things where like it maybe took me a minute to like understand and get used to it. But also now we've hung out, you know, and it's okay. And also I think in that sort of situation, it's incumbent on the ex to like make it very clear that like, I'm so excited to meet you. They clearly love you so much. And like, I am like not trying to step on your toes, not still feeling possessive over that person and like not trying to get with them and, you know, very much don't want to. Like, you know, I feel like Bette and Rosie need to have this kind of conversation on our Gen Q.
Yes.
I mean, Carrie's trying.
Oh my God. Yeah, I can't actually call her Carrie. Did you notice how I said Bette and Rosie?
Yeah, I just can't. I love it.
Yeah, she is trying. And I see where she's coming from. And in that situation, I think Tina needs to step up a little bit too and make herself a little clearer.
Yeah, yeah. That was going to be another question of like, what are some good media representations of people who are friends with their exes? I mean, if you, how long were Bette and Alice even together for?
Oh my God, I totally that was gonna be my forgot go-to. About that. Yeah, and it's funny because I can think of other representations. I feel like friends with exes is more commonly represented among straights in media than it actually occurs in real life.
Just for sure.
Because TV shows need to have the cast of characters remain the same. And so like there's only so many combinations of dating, like on Friends, which is like the straightest show of all time, besides those two lesbians who were on it. Like some of those people dated each other.
They all did.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. But one of my favorites, this is not a fictional representation, but a creative collaboration, is St. Vincent and Carrie Brownstein, who clearly realized it didn't work, but have now like made a new film together. St. Vincent produced a Sleater-Kinney album. I know nothing about their lives or their relationship, but it has
been... that feels complicated.
Really? To
that
you?
Gives me anxiety. Yeah.
Expand.
I don't know. I'm like, weren't they together for kind of a while?
I think it only lasted like, yeah, I guess that is a while.
But I mean, that seems like a while
in gay time, especially
to then like work together on projects that involve like that are kind of intense. If I were the new girlfriend of either of them, which already feels like an intimidating position to be in, right? Like that alone. And now it's like, oh, and then her like superstar ex-girlfriend, and now they're working like closely together late nights. You know, a meeting of the minds, and then you're just like, hey, picked you up some sparkling water. Like, I don't know.
I'm just thinking of the band members in Sleater-Kinney being like, what?
Like, Carrie
and then one of them left.
Oh yeah, that's true. I'm sure there's some drama there. That
their drummer left the band after that. Like she changed the sound.
She didn't like St. Vincent, right?
Right.
Yeah. But it was less about. Oh, so maybe she felt like the only reason she got the job was because. But Carrie Brownstein also dated Corinne Tucker. Like there's just a whole petri dish full of
Muna.
Exes.
The band Muna. We just had on. They said that. At one point, they had all dated each other, the three of them in that band.
Wow. Or I think just two of them dated. I think or just two Naomi of them? Okay. And one of them. Yeah.
But they're all best friends and obviously not affected.
Yeah, you're right that creative partnerships feel very intimate in a way that could be difficult to get over. Whereas just like two people who happen to be going to the same dyke bar or something might not.
Yeah.
But I did Google. I was like, are there any other famous exes who have stayed friends? And of course, there's like 70 slideshows of like 36 celebrities who have stayed friends with their exes.
Right, right.
Which tells me that it is uncommon enough and seen as sort of unnatural enough that you need a whole landing page and slideshow about it.
Right.
And, you know, I guess it makes sense for people, you know, because breakups are very painful. And like, I personally have never been immediately friends with an ex, like always needed some time to like distance myself. But it did make me wonder, I'm a lot more, I guess, surprised to see straight couples doing that, straight celebrities doing it. Whereas when St. Vincent and Carrie Brownstein announced that they were, you know, producing this album, or that St. Vincent was going to be producing this Sleater-Kinney album, I was like, oh, of course, like that makes complete sense. Why would they not want to see each other again? They're both incredibly talented musicians.
Right. And then you see things like J-Lo and Ben Affleck, and you're like, well, that's why they can't be friends, because there's still something there.
Oh, but what about true. Demi Moore and Bruce Willis and Ashton Kutcher all hanging out?
They do? That's sweet. When you got kids in the picture, I think there's a little more impetus to remain friends, too. Well, don't they have kids?
Yeah, but and now Demi, but Demi's queer now.
She is? What?
Excuse you?
Well, that explains that.
Demi Moore
has
a girlfriend.
That's no longer a straight situation.
Yeah.
No, she doesn't. Really?
Yes.
Since when?
I didn't get that push notification.
Hold on. I'm not making this up. I have to Google
it. Gay push notification. We need New York Times style breaking news.
For anything happening in the community. That's important. Yeah. Mostly just new people coming out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're blowing my mind.
Yeah, me too. This opens up a whole new world of possibilities for me personally.
Yeah, this article from 2019, Demi Moore's secret girlfriend and the adorable child they're raising together. She's been dating some...
Is this in like the National Enquirer or something?
Well, that one is from the UK Mirror, dating
one more source,
Serbian stylist for the last 3 years.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I thought you were saying a Serbian stylist broke the story. And I was like,
No, get off the Zoom.
Well, are you saying that Serbian stylists are
on the record?
Incredible. Wow.
Just looking for,
Well, that explains why she and Ashton Kutcher and Bruce Willis all hang out together.
Yeah.
I want to ask a question of the technical bisexual here. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about, like, if somebody in my friend group, was dating a cis man, for instance, and he was like in the crew for a while, we're hanging out, and then they broke up. I would feel a lot more weird about keeping that ex in the group because, like, the only reason why you were here was because of the queer person, and now you guys aren't dating. So, but I'm wondering if that seems unfair. In terms of, just general, like, bi inclusion and, like, keeping the family together.
Interesting.
Yeah, no one really talks about that. And I can't think of any examples of that. And I guess we'll have to see what happens when Tom and Alice break up next season. Am I right?
Yeah, because, I also, I think that relationship is a good example of what it looks like for somebody to bring a cis man into a gay bar all the time. And everyone seems fine with it on the show. But I remember reading a piece at Slate.com, actually, although I didn't write this one. But, it was a bi woman basically saying a way for queer spaces to be more inclusive is to not make it uncomfortable when cis men come to them. Cis straight men who are dating bi women, for instance.
Yeah. I have a friend who, like, a couple times she was talking about being at a gay bar and that there were, like, straight men there or something, and they were with, like, a gay guy friend, and the gay guy friend yelled and was like, get out of the bar, or something like that. And I was like, wait, you don't know if his girlfriend's bi or if he's bi?
Right.
You don't know what the story is. So I'm also for, as long as, like, a guy isn't being creepy, I'm, like, totally fine with cis straight men being in a queer space if they're there, for a reason.
They come to
other
hens.
Than,
I
like,
mean,
lurking.
Yeah. There are some cis straight men who are just, really into Gen Q, who come to the watch parties and have, like, not just in a creepy way, like, are genuinely invested in the storylines and the relationships. And right. You know, I'm talking about.
That's great.
Is he straight? Is that guy straight that comes every week?
If we're thinking of the same, yeah.
Oh, he could be. I don't know.
But yeah, I don't know about bringing the guy around, the ex of a bisexual, into, like, the predominantly lesbian friend group. I haven't seen it.
I don't mean to put you on the spot and have you issue a ruling from all of bi kind.
I say no. Just trying to keep the Dyking Out listeners happy.
No, I think, like, regardless, like, I wouldn't mind that if a a friend who was bi woman was dating a guy, and then he was hanging around a lot, and then they realized like maybe they should be friends, and he was still coming out. If he was cool, I'd be fine with that. Just like I wouldn't want, like, if your ex is a shitty woman, I wouldn't want her to hang around with the group too. Yeah. If the person's cool, then they're cool. If they're, you know, obnoxious, or they were like mean to you, or they were a drag on the group, then yeah, this is a great excuse to make them go away.
Yeah.
But like, I think that if they're able to, you know, hang in that kind of a space without any issues, it should be.
Well, riddle me this, Carolyn. Yeah. If something tragic happens and Allie and I are no longer together and I start casually dating a guy, will you fire me?
Yeah, oh, no, wow. Christina's going to be the new co-host. That's what's gonna
I'll turn that down as a protest for, you know, the bi erasure that's been happening.
And then you'll bring me on and fill your third position at the slip.
Yeah.
At Outward. There we go.
We'll just play musical co-hosts. I think because you would still be queer, so obviously
she would be queer.
Melody would,
not the
yeah,
guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The guy wouldn't be queer. Yeah,
yeah.
Unless he was, he could be.
I know. I don't have much to compare it to. I say bi just to leave room with just like so many conversations around gender. Like I am far down on the scale of Kinsey, and I my one significant relationship with a man that I had, like, I think was queer. Like, I truly believe all his friends were lesbians and his roommates. He would say he was a lesbian trapped in a man's body.
Wow.
Lisa.
Like, but it was before a lot of conversations about transness or gender, you know? So I don't know. It felt like such a queer relationship. Like, I never went down on him. Like, he was like, I'm just not a blowjob guy. Like, you know, like stuff like
interesting.
That. So I'm like,
have you, being friends with exes, have you kept in touch with
Oh no, him? I cut him out of my life completely after we broke up. I told
would
you,
love
I
to know what's going
I've
on
grown
with him
a
now.
Lot, but I am very petty, angry, you know,
but towards you know
my
that
exes
about
and
yourself.
My girlfriend's exes. Yeah. I've
That's important.
Grown in the last 5 years, especially dealing with my girlfriend's exes and just how around they were in the first year or two of our relationship.
Are they still like, around? Do they listen to this show? Are they gonna be like, oh,
some of them, yeah. I think some of them will feel seen right
Aww.
Now.
let's get, I think we've got a caller.
Oh my God, Sarah. And also we're comedians and it's like, it is kind of like even smaller community. When you think of like queer women within a comedy community, it's,
you know,
you're
what
running into exes even more.
I was going to say when you bring that up, I feel like in terms of the more straight world where I see people being friends with their exes is within the comedy world, because
you
you're constantly
to.
Running huh. into these people that you have to be, you're going to be booked on shows with them and you're going to try to find a way to get along. I don't know. I feel like if I sat here and thought about it, I could probably think of a bunch of exes in the community. Like
right now,
heteronormative. Yeah,
that's funny yeah. because when I was Googling and all these little like roundups of comedians or of celebrities that have stayed friends, the first one in a lot of them were Mindy Kaling and BJ Novak.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Classic
comedy people, you know, they're around.
Have you ever tried being friends with an ex and it didn't work out? And you were like, no, I can't do this.
With a couple exes, Cologne Gal was one of them. You know, it sort of became clear after we broke up or stopped dating. I forget if it was actually like a full-on breakup or we just sort of drifted apart. But it sort of became clear, like, the thing that we most had in common was that we liked sleeping with each other. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it wasn't that we, like, really couldn't stand each other anymore, but it was more like, this was the thing holding us together, and there's just not really a reason to, you know, we'll be friendly, and but that almost made it easier to, like, see her out with other people, because I was like, oh, yep, that isn't me for a reason. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I guess there are some people who I have dated casually where I was sort of the one to break things off, where I think they felt more awkward around me because maybe they were still mad at me or something like that. Have definitely had at least like two situations like that where, you know, I wasn't a dick to them, but like it ended in a way that I think was more painful for them.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I totally respect that. And I'm certainly not going to like force myself on anybody. And in fact, have had literal like logistics conversations where, you know, in DC, we don't have a ton of queer spaces. And so there was like this monthly party that we knew we were all going to be at, especially because I think we probably met there or something. And it was like, okay, are you going to this one or should I go to this one? You know what I mean? And like maybe for the first couple months we'll trade off so that we're not just in each other's faces so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a friend going through that. Even in LA, again, a big city, you'd think there'd be enough entertainment, like parties to go around. But them and their ex are like splitting up these skating parties they used to like to go to together.
And I imagine the skating community, the queer skating community is even smaller. That's like a lot of steps down the funnel. Wow.
Man. So.
Yeah. Have you guys ever tried to make it work and like actually thought it might work at one point?
I sort of tried. I wasn't looking to be good friends with an ex, but I had like a really toxic relationship like throughout college and a little bit afterwards. And when we broke up, they wanted to be friends. I was the one who ended it. I'm like, we can't, this is like really the end, this fourth breakup. And they're like, well, can we be friends? I'm like, no, maybe let's revisit in a year. And I just said that so they would leave me alone. And in a year, I got a text that was like, hey,
oh,
how's
my
it going?
God.
Yeah. And
they set a little calendar alert.
Yeah. And I was like, no. And then at that point, I had already started dating the person who I later went on to marry, who became my wife. One time I answered a Craigslist ad for somebody that had an extra Ani DeFranco ticket. And it was that ex. And they called.
Wow.
Yeah. And they called me and they're like, I probably don't need to explain why you can't have my extra ticket.
Oh, my God.
And
that,
so
it feels like if that happened in like a queer short story, I'd be like, you weren't creative enough here. Like, you're way too on the nose.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Heck. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a little much. So then fast forward to like I get divorced. And then I'm like, I think enough time has passed because I'm someone like I love to keep in touch with people from my past. I don't like being on bad terms with anybody. So I for some reason they reached out, I think like after the election or something. And they're like, hey, you know, I kind of see you popping up online. And I just want to say, like, I'm sorry for all the shitty things I did in the past. And I'm rooting for you. And I'm like, you know, that's really nice. Maybe enough time has passed that we can be friends or at least not strangers. So I added them back like on social media and stuff. And then right away, it just became like super intense. It was like messages at like 2 a.m, like, are you up? And then by then, of course, because I'm a just walking stereotype, I'm dating the person who is my wife now. And I'm like, you can't be sending me messages at 2 a.m. waking me up and having the woman next to me being like, what was that?
Oh, my God.
My ex-girlfriend just texting you up at 2 a.m., you know? So,
wow.
So then I had to cut it off. Yeah. And I was like, never mind. And just like blocked. And that was that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I tried to be friends with the last boyfriend I had, like cis boyfriend, before not doing that anymore. And, you know, I think we got drinks a couple times. We had dinner one time until he said something like, oh, yeah. And we were together for like 2 years or 3 years, a while. And he said something like, oh, yeah, you like being gay now, like it all makes sense now. Or like this clarifies a lot of things about like what happened in our relationship. And I was like, what? We had like a perfectly fine relationship and like did all the sex stuff. And I was happy about that. You know what I mean? Like everything seemed fine. What are you trying to like? That just seemed like such a weirdly homophobic thing to say.
Yeah.
Then I was like, okay, we're completely done. I'm certainly not going to be friends with you now.
Huh.
And like, are you trying to make yourself feel better about the fact that
you put the failure of the relationship on? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah. He's like, oh, I don't have to feel self-conscious. Cause you know, some dudes can be weird like that, where it's like makes them feel like less of a man or whatever if you go and date women.
Right.
I was like, wow, you really are a child.
Yeah.
So that was the end of that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Because I feel like I do know of some lesbians who are friends with like their high school boyfriends or whatever, because there is this like understanding of like, yeah, it didn't work out because I was gay, but you know, we got along then and you're
a good
friend.
I know a lot of lesbians who dated dudes in high school who then also turned out to be gay, which I find just very
that is also a thing.
I love when that happens. About,
I just found out recently the guy I went to prom with thought I was in love with him all through high school.
And, oh, wow.
And now he sees like clearly that wasn't the case. I think he thought he was doing a big favor, like taking me to prom, like giving me attention. He thought I was in love with him for years. And someone recently told me that. And he's apparently shocked to see that I've been with a woman for so long.
Wow.
But speaking of men, you know, I feel like they don't set up their friends with exes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, that's more of a thing in the lesbian community.
Totally.
A big running joke on TikTok. Definitely a theme. Is it like a territorial mindset too with them? I just don't hear enough about them.
It's funny. An ex of mine once tried to set me up with her most recent ex. And I'm like, no, what? Let it happen organically. No.
Your ex tried to set you up with their ex.
Yeah. Yes.
Wow. Interesting.
This is like my first girlfriend, and it wasn't like neither of us. We were just like the only two lesbians we knew at the time. So like that's not what made it weird. But I'm also like, don't pass off the person you just broke up with to me.
Yeah. Or at least give a good, like, thorough, you know, review, and then allow you to make the decision for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have a situation where I have like a circle of queers that spans the United States, such that my partner and I both dated people who live on the West Coast before we knew each other. And those two people are also exes with each other.
Great.
Which is like, once I found that out, I was kind of like, did we just unlock a special level, or like, do we get a prize here?
Right, right.
It just... but then also once I thought too hard about it, I was like, wow, do I really have an intense type such that I'm closing myself off from like, or me and this other woman just like both dated two of the same people. And we're like, yeah, that's the only kind of person I'll date.
I love that. Yeah. That gets hard too when the web of exes and there's overlap, I don't know, like, I just remember, at my first wedding, I had two friends who had dated, and then they weren't together anymore, and then one of them was dating someone new, and so they came with their new girlfriend, and their ex was there too, and I was like, this is all going to be cool, right? Like, we're all fine, we all talked about it, and it's like, yep, yep, and then my one friend ended up, like, leaving during the reception, because once... she was there. She was like, actually, this isn't cool. And I'm not feeling great right now. And I'm going to leave. And I was so bummed. And I'm like, oh, this stuff is so messy. And like, yeah, I don't know. Like, so sometimes it's hard to get a sense of like, is it cool? Is everyone cool? Are we pretending we're cool? Are there still feelings? Are there like, can it ever be totally fine? I feel like it can be. But how do you know? I don't know.
I kind of feel like usually, not always, if both people have sort of moved on to their first, even if it's a small little relationship post their relationship together, I feel like that's a good sign that
both need
you know
to do
I think
it,
we can all sort of like I'm getting mine, you're getting yours. And, you know, even if there's still, we might still have like a little bit of a lingering feeling, or, you know, whether that's anger or attraction or whatever it is,
right,
a feeling, you know, we both have other things going on in our lives and are not completely consumed by this relationship that's over. But also sometimes, like, you never know how you're going to feel until you see them or until you have a couple drinks in you or something.
Ooh. Yeah.
And then who knows what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think within, do you guys have any friends who dated each other within like a friend group and then broke up?
Yeah.
Is that what happened?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. But yeah, but now we all vacation together, and one of them is married, and you know who you are. You're listening right now. It is married, and like the wife is like friends with the ex, and like there's no weirdness, you know, anymore.
So
and there's been enough like time and space that it's all good. Yeah, thankfully that didn't really seem to hurt the friendship group. It wasn't like a group of like strictly queer women. It was just like our college friends who were all really close, and like, it's nice that it's cool. So that's a case where I'm like, yay, I'm glad people can be friends with their exes, because I like when we all travel together, you know?
Yeah, I do feel like it can be, if there's like a couple in a group of friends that's been together a really long time, that couple can feel some undue pressure to stay together.
Mm.
Almost like it's like mom and dad, like, you know, you guys, we like all thought you had such a great relationship and whatever. Or like, if you broke up, what would happen here? Like, you are the ones that brought us all together or something like that. And
right,
there's definitely been my wife with her previous relationship before me was in a situation like that where everyone was like, oh, what happened? You know what I mean? Like, oh, we loved her. And then I came into the picture, and a couple of those people like weren't yet over the ex that had just left. And we're sort of like, oh, you're like the one that sort of broke them up. Well, it's complicated the way our relationship began, but I wasn't a person that broke them up. I just happened to be there.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was, I think like people can also have a hard time accepting their friends' new partners if there was an ex that they feel like had been wronged, or they're just sad as like, you know, out of the picture for now.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I have a group of queer women I hang out with, and we're trying to plan a trip for next summer. And I'm just like, I don't know. And it's this couple is the nucleus of the friend group, and they plan everything. And it's just, it does. I feel like, am I putting pressure on that? We're like, should we all take on different responsibilities for planning and divvy things up more? It's all like, so much is hinging on this one couple, like organizing and calling all the shots. And
it's funny,
everyone knows each other through them.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, you just got to do whatever you can do to help them stay together, you know?
Yeah.
If once someone needs to go over there and help them with chores, like whatever they fight about, just like try to mitigate that from the outside. Yeah. When you're talking about planning, it actually made me think of the most dramatic like friend group breakup that happened in my recent memory, which was, there was one person, she's actually since moved away, which helped with the drama part, but she was always the one planning sort of like elaborate, like, we're all going apple picking on Saturday, and I'm gonna make little like crafts, like a little pin for everyone to wear, and like if there's a dinner party, like I'm not gonna be the one to host, but I'll bring all the decorations and bake all the food, and like very much like loved all the domestic arts and also loved planning. And she dated somebody within the friend group, and they had, it was sort of like a quick to flame up and quick to flame out situation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there was a big apple picking trip coming up. And the one that they broke up with, it was like, well, you're clearly not going to be invited because you guys just broke up, and it was not a happy breakup. You know, it wasn't like an amicable parting of ways. And it was like, okay, sorry, like you're probably going to be the only one not going on this thing. And there's, everyone's going to be posting on Instagram, and it's, you're going to want to probably stay off Insta for the next, you know, weekend or something.
Yeah.
And, but I kind of remember like laughing a little bit in spite of myself that they were like, so like, I'm not going on the apple picking trip, and like everyone's going on the apple. I'm like, you can find something else to do on this
one
day.
You're gonna have to go to Whole Foods, babe.
Yeah,
I don't know.
We'll like bring you, if it's really the apples you're concerned about, like we'll find a way to get you some.
I mean, when my ex and I got divorced, I remember some friends, they reached out to me to ask my address. I'm like, oh, good, I'm still invited to the wedding. And then I never got the invite. And I'm like, oh, okay, no, they changed their mind. They only invited my ex-wife, which is fair. They were closer to her. But it was this thing that, yeah, we were friends first for a couple of years, and we had this friend group. It wasn't a queer friend group, but then we started dating, and everyone's like, oh, changing the dynamics of the group. And I'm like, yeah, you know, and it did kind of feel like this pressure. I'm like, oh yeah, if we break up, then like, I'm definitely the one that is going to be ostracized. Like, I'll be kicked out because I came a little bit later to the party.
Wow. The asking for the address before the guest list is completely set, that's like a breach of wedding etiquette I didn't even know existed, but it seems like maybe the most important one.
Yeah. I really thought I was being invited to that wedding, and then I was like, oh, okay, well.
Would you have felt comfortable at the wedding? Would you have wanted to be there?
It was probably too soon that it would have been weird, because it would have been like our entire old friend group. Like, now I'm at a point where I feel like, you know, I don't think Cecilia, my wife, would really want me to be friends with my ex-wife. And I'm not going to go out my way to do it. But I feel like we are both in a place where we could be. We're both in other relationships. All of my anger around what happened between us is like gone. I don't care. I'm finally over it, listeners. And no, I've been over it for a little bit now. But like, any of those factors that would make it a problem, I feel like, aren't there, and we could easily like hang out as much as you hang out with people in New York that don't live anywhere near you, you know, like once a year,
yeah,
and have it not be weird.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Like, I think proximity matters a lot. Like,
yeah,
if there aren't things that make it easy to hang out together, it's very easy for an ex to become somebody who you're like, yeah, I like them, everything's fine, you know, but we're not going to make an effort to like fly out to see them, or however you get around in New York, take 3 subway lines to get them.
Yeah. When talking about the friend group breaking up, it brings me back to my favorite topic in the world, the L word, with Bette and Tina. And one of the things about Gen Q in this season that is a little bit hard, it's like one of Rosie/Carrie's big stressors is having to like fit in with the group of friends. But as we see, Tina's not really in the group of friends anymore. And,
you
know, she wasn't at Alice's book reading, where there was like a whole chapter reading on Dana. And it's like, yo, Tina was there for that. Like, it's kind of weird to have Tina in the show and have Carrie be like, oh, all this pressure to be with, you know, to be around you guys, and I don't fit in. But Tina's not, you know, hanging out anymore.
Yeah. I'm wondering if that was a narrative decision, or like a, do we really want Laurel Holloman to be in every episode of this show decision?
I think it's the Laurel Holloman thing. I think because she doesn't want to be a regular character on the L word. She like moved doesn't on and she's doing it. Yeah. She's doing it.
She just wants to paint.
As a favor. As a service to the fans to round it out. I'm sure the money's nice, but yeah, she just wants to paint. She's not.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem like in that relationship, everyone chose Bette in part because, and we're back to the discussion about, you know, bi situations, Tina then was dating a man. And, you know, I think Alice was like enmeshed enough in the group that people were cool with her, you know, various male partners. But I don't think Tina was able to make the extra effort to sort of get over that hump. And I don't think, like, whatever man she was dating was very...
Henry?
You have an incredible memory. yeah, but one would think, you know, I would like to know who Tina's friends are at this point, and if Bette feels compelled at all to be friends with them.
Right.
Yeah, Tina should just be friends with Carrie's friends. I bet it's like... Fran Dreschner and
it was so refreshing to me to see the character of Carrie, and now seeing that actually she's like not confident in herself. I don't know. It made me sad because I was like, oh, here's like one of the very few masculine of center characters that has ever been on the L Word. Mm-hmm. Someone who's not like super polished or anything. And somebody who I feel like is a great match for Tina because yes. Bette is so self-centered and, you know, everything when you're with her, everything's about her.
She's mean.
And to see Carrie be so self-conscious about not fitting in with this group of like super image conscious lesbians made me really sad. And I hope that she finds her own little network to, you know, be at home in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Me too.
That's definitely one of those cases where I would say you don't have to be friends with your ex or your current partner's ex.
Yeah. Right. But the kid thing, that's a whole other ex conversation, is that when there's kids, like, yeah. you better find a way to be friends with that ex, or yeah. at least have it be cordial. And
don't do a throuple with your current partner.
Yes, another lesson from Chip.
Another good lesson, kids in the mix, too.
It's basically an Aesop's lesbian fables. it's funny because the Esther Perel game that I played over the weekend, now
bring
that's basically
back,
all I talk
back.
About.
Yes.
I'm a fangirl now. A lot of my friends were talking about how their parents' divorces affected their views on marriage and what a good relationship is, and how it, like, you know, some people were like, it was great because I actually got to see my parents be great versions of themselves that they never were when they were together. And other people were like, yeah, just basically made me think that long-term relationships can't last. You yeah. know, it, like, divorce just affects everyone in such different ways when you're kids. And the friend who brought the game into our world is dating someone who's going through a divorce and has kids. And so she was just sort of absorbing everything. Like, you know, it's like kids are the little sponges and they soak up everything. And, you know, seeing how their parents relate to each other or their friends, it's a lot of pressure. But it's kind of inescapable.
Yeah. Well, I think we have to wrap up the conversation there for time, even though I'm very much enjoying this. Christina, thank you so much for taking the time.
Oh, my God. There's nothing I would rather be doing right now. This was so fun. Thank you, guys.
Where can people find you, follow you, stalk you? Ask you questions.
Oh my God, I love my queer stalkers. If you're out there, I doubt anyone is, but you can find me on Twitter at C Cotterucci. You can figure out how to spell my last name. It's phonetic. And on slate.com. And I really would love it if you like this show, listen to Outward.
Yes.
I love the idea of, you know, if we can do some cross promotion / cross pollination, I feel like there would be a lot of good overlap here.
Yes. Definitely.
And we will link to the Booksmart article in the show notes.
I just published a really intense story I'd been working on for like 5 months, but the Booksmart one is really what's going to be written on my tombstone. So, yeah.
Okay, great.
Love it.
That's still, you know, the mystery was not solved until this very evening. And wow. So I'm just so, so happy to learn. You've given me a lot to think about, Melody. Thank you. Thank you for sharing.
We're going to have our listeners sound off as we promote this too.
We'll do a poll in the stories.
Have you heard of anyone outside of the Booksmart character or Melody Kamali that's happening too?
Were you secretly like the inspiration for the movie? Do you know anyone who worked
on
the film?
That's what I asked.
No, who wrote that? Not Diablo.
Olivia Wilde. Did she write it or just direct it?
I think she just directed it. But yeah, I was like, Melody, did that story get
who
around?
Wrote it? Who's reading my diary and who's writing this movie?
Or was it the person you were hooking up with?
Oh my God. Guys, I gotta go. I got a lot of stalking to do.
I love
thank
it.
Thank you again.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you guys. This was awesome.
Okay.
Can I make a note?
Yeah.
There's a point where I am asked what smell like evokes, you know, emotion or
makes
from
you
my past,
nostalgic. Yeah.
Makes you nostalgic. That really fucked me up. And I was like, I don't, have an answer. Like, I think you could tell in the moment I was like, I don't know. I think I dissociated a lot and I joke that. But then I looked into it and yes, it is very much an indicator of a lot of trauma in your childhood to not those. And so it's like, because there's a lot from my childhood I don't remember and have actively repressed. I was just, you know, I felt like if you're listening and you don't have any smells. Yeah. I mean, and then also, what if I had gone into that as my answer? And I think I was uncomfortable and I think I knew. And in the moment I could have been like, well, here's the actual reason why. But we were just kicking off the interview. But that's also a great way to get to know someone if you're playing that card game. Get to know a little bit too much. Not so casual.
I'm just like, juicy fruit.
I know. I was just so triggered. Yeah, don't have that. Anyways, fried dough smells good. It makes me happy, I guess. Moving on.
Well, trauma is a good segue, I guess, into this listener question, unfortunately. Yeah. Well, let's see if we can help this listener out, because I would love to do it.
Okay. I am 22 years old and have a girlfriend that I love a lot. I lived my whole life thinking I was straight because of the idea of anything else never even crossed my mind until I met my girlfriend. She changed everything for me, but I find myself holding back because I'm upset that I'm not straight. We've been going out 2 years, and I'm thinking about coming out to my dad, but I'm scared. My dad has said in passing comments, I will disown you if you're gay. This is really hard because my dad and I are actually really close. I want to embrace my life and all the wonderful parts of it, but I am internalizing a lot of homophobia. How do I deal with this? How do I come out to my homophobic dad?
Ugh.
I mean, internalized homophobia is a theme that has come up on past episodes. We do have a whole episode about it where we solved it. So just go back to that.
Done and done. Thank you, Rita.
Compulsory heterosexuality. We also talk about internalized homophobia a lot on that episode too. It's a thing that comes with time, but that's a really hard thing because I can't relate to being upset about not being straight, you know?
I can't relate to not wanting to disappoint my parents. I was very rebellious.
Yeah, I mean, your dad's certainly not being ambiguous, which is really scary because a lot of people are afraid. They're like, oh, I don't know what my parents will think. But you know very clearly what your dad's going to think. So that's usually a time, depending on a bunch of factors, where it's like, do you need to tell your dad? But you do have a partner, and that can be very hard on your partner and your relationship to be in the closet, because that involves a lot of lying, that creates a lot of stress, that creates a strain on the relationship. So if you and your dad are really that close, maybe there is a way that you can get him to understand and not have it be whatever boogeyman that he thinks it is.
Yeah. Would your dad be open to watching a piece of film art that handled it well?
Happiest Season?
Yeah. Throw on Happiest Season.
If you want a movie about internalized homophobia, watch Happiest Season. Get triggered all over again.
I mean, obviously you have to mentally prepare. Have you tried talking to siblings? Do you have siblings to talk to about it first?
Do you have people who are close to your dad? Do you have like an aunt or an uncle or somebody who can kind of be an ally or someone in your dad's orbit who could maybe be a go-between for you guys in case things do shut down?
Yeah. I mean, it's important to have resources on hand, right? Because even if they do reject you in that moment, they could be like, well, let me take a look at that if it's a pamphlet. I know it sounds corny. And like, because you're just trying to make the conversation as neutral and comfortable as you can, right?
Right.
Like, you don't need to get into, you don't need to tell too much. Like, it's just a fact about you. So how do you finesse that?
I also think if you ever hear him say, I will disown you if you're gay, just say, I'll disown you if you're homophobic. Checkmate.
It's a game.
No, this is really hard and serious stuff. And I think, you know, going in prepared, going in with a support system, sometimes it helps to do kind of like scenario planning. So like, what happens if he takes it this way? What happens if he says this? And come prepared with kind of responses so that you aren't caught off guard with his reaction, or you aren't left without anything to say or anything to come back with. That usually helps when you're trying to have a difficult conversation. And in terms of the internalized homophobia, there is nothing wrong with you loving people who happen to be the same sex as you. Solved. There you go.
Yeah.
See, nothing's wrong with it. There's no reason. No, it's a deep rooted thing. You, the more queer people in your orbit, the more you see people who are happy and queer and in love, and the more you feel queer love and see queer people be celebrated. I think all that kind of stuff helps make the internalized homophobia go away. I know you mentioned you lived in the suburbs of Arizona, and it's not that easy to be queer there, but try to find the spaces that you can, find online communities, and
yeah. Or even, you know, like LGBT centers, you know?
Yeah.
Don't they have counseling or like group sessions for people to talk it through and strategize with?
Yeah, therapy, if you can have access to therapy. One of our sponsors is BetterHelp. Maybe that can be a resource for you to talk to someone on a regular basis about these feelings. And, you know, if you listen to this podcast every week and you don't think that we're horrible perverts, you know, I think we're pretty
speak
cool.
For yourself. So,
yeah. we're horrible perverts and we're happy.
Yeah.
So nothing to be afraid of there.
In most situations, parents often do come around over time. You just have to be cut and dry about it. Don't beat around the bush. Like, you don't want to have this conversation more than once.
Don't be apologetic about it. Mm-hmm. Don't give them hope that maybe it will change and think that will soften the blow or something like that.
Yeah.
Just, yeah. Be direct. Have your support network. And honestly, wish you the best of luck and hope that you can find people who are maybe in a similar situation. There are a lot of people out there, and talking to them will help. And talking to people who have been through it will certainly be very helpful and give you the courage needed to have these difficult conversations. So
there's nothing wrong with you.
Yeah, you're great. Just the way you are. If you have a question for us, you can submit it to dykingout@gmail.com. dykingout@gmail.com. That's the way to get it on our list of questions. We love your questions. Keep them coming. You should also be following us where we ask questions of you on our social media at Dyking Out and our stories. All sorts of questions coming up nowadays. At Dyking Out, at Dyking Out Podcast on TikTok. You can follow me at TGI Carolyn.
You can follow me at Melody Kamali.
Thanks for listening this week.
We love you. We'll see you next Tuesday.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait. The excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make season two even more memorable together.